Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Market insight and analysis. You're listening to the opening bell of CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
Let's start off, Jim, with, of course, big tech, AI, NVIDIA. You're there. We can't wait for your big interview tomorrow. But what are your expectations for today?
Okay, so today I think there are a lot of people trying to game this event. This is an event that if people look at it, there is a keynote that Jensen gives, and there's actually a countdown clock on the site about when it's going to start. That is the first time it's been live with real people, obviously, in many years. And I've got to tell you something, David, people like to speculate about what he's going to say. Get out of that game. He won't let you know until it starts. It's all a secret. That's how he does it. Is he a dramatic guy? In the New Yorker piece I told you to read about, he does not regard himself as a classically great speaker. But today he delivers. And I think that we will be surprised because he does not let himself be gamed. I think people have to start recognizing that.
Okay. So that being said, and secretive though he may be, you got to tell us at least what some of your expectations may be. Certainly there are at least questions that many people think are going to be addressed, Jim, and I'm curious as to what you think they are.
Okay, so I think that what will be addressed is not necessarily the total addressable market in terms of what number it'll be, but it'll be about biology. It'll be about healthcare. It will be about finance. It will be about auto. It will be about manufacturing. And yes, it'll also be about accelerated computing and generative AI. So what I'm saying is it's going to go vertical. And if you look at all the different, you get some cues. There's just these tremendous breakout sessions. You see where he's going. He's going toward healthcare. He's going toward figuring out things that can do best with accelerated computing. And then secondarily, he's going toward Microsoft AI Pilot and going toward what we're going to talk about with Google, going toward what Anthropic's doing. So I don't think he's going to rule out, obviously, he has to talk about what traditional AI is. But I think he's going to talk about what accelerated computing can do to make the world a better place, because he's a bigger thinker than we are. He's just bigger. Da Vinci knew about the helicopter.
You've been talking about the digital twins before anybody had any idea what in the world you were talking about.
We were never considered digital twins, you and me.
No, we're like Danny DeVito and Arnold Schwarzenegger. Maybe. The accelerated computing market and or at least sort of the data center market. You know, I'm looking, listen to a podcast this weekend. Bill Gurley, Brad Gerstner do this podcast. Gerstner talking about how he believes, or Jensen Huang now believes, the data center market will be as much as $2 trillion just over the next 4 to 5 years. That's the addition of capacity that's needed to power the large language models. Where are you on that? And, you know, NVIDIA maintains any semblance of its current market share, let alone you discount it, it's still a very big number.
Well, look, I like to go back to when Bob Noyce and Gordon Moore and Andy Grove were the formative stage of Intel, where they talked about how that they had a computer that was this size. And it's going to power far more than what a mainframe does. And one of the people in the audience said, well, wait a second, you're never going to be able to charge $2 million for that. And said, no, we're going to charge $200 for it. This is where Jensen is. He has a formula to make things that make it so that everything that you currently that is digitized in your world has to be replaced. And it has to be, there are going to be some that will be at the edge. You can do some edge computing on your phone. But most of it is in the data center. And what he's saying is, look, everything that you have is too slow. Everything you have does not do what my computers can do. So $2 trillion, $4 trillion, I don't know what it takes to replace everything. But, David, everything was replaced by Intel. Everything. And everything is going to be replaced by NVIDIA. And I think the people who don't understand that don't understand how much more a computer can do. This morning, Dylan, who works with me, don't remember, he wanted me to send a memo to him. Well, I had to type in the memo. I had to send the email. I had to attach it. Now, come next year, I'll just say, will you please send the March 18 email about what I'm looking at to Dylan? I'm not going to type anything, but that's Jensen. And to some degree, I'm going to give Lisa Su some due here. She also has that. But that's the new world. Are you ever going to sit there and type an email again if you can just say, will you please send that thing to Faber? Send it to Faber right now. And it might come back and say, sure.
Or it said, it'll actually win it. It'll be like, you sure you want to do that? Really? You sure?
No, but we don't. Why would we ever want something where we type? What was the typing thing about? I mean, I saw a typewriter store in Florida the other day. It was obviously closed. I mean, what is this thing? A keyboard? Oh, that makes a lot of sense. Let me type in letters that send something to David Faber. Now, how about I say, send it to Faber? Isn't that better? That's Jensen's way.
Right.
You can have the other way. I'm giving you the other. I'm giving you the keyboard. You want the keyboard? It's all yours.
I want to move on, but just to finish up, when you say that everything's going to be replaced,
yes.
What does that mean for the Intels of the world then?
Well, it's interesting because if you go on a Microsoft, you go Copilot, and you say who's the best partner, it says Intel. Of course, that's completely untrue. I think that what happens with Intel is there's still room for a CPU, not a GPU. And ARM has their CPU and their partner with Jensen. You have CPUs for 20% of what's basically the box that Jensen, not really a chip, it's like a box that Jensen has. So there's room for CPUs, but in the end, David, there was room for IBM too, you know?
Yeah, well, there still is.
Yes, there is. IBM's a very good partner with NVIDIA, by the way.
All right, let's move on. Speaking of potential partners, let's move on to the story this morning, Jim, because it's an interesting one. It's got both Apple shares and even more so Alphabet, which, of course, hasn't been doing particularly well this year,
right,
at least as a member of the mega cap tech group. They're both up. It's a Bloomberg story in which they cite sources saying that Apple's in talks to build Google's Gemini AI engine. Be a part of the iPhone, essentially. Both companies are apparently having active discussions about Apple licensing Gemini and then it being able to power new features and things of that nature. Things we're waiting for, of course. We may get some details around come June. Also, by the way, the report says Apple recently held discussions as well with OpenAI, may consider using its model. Give me your take. You know, I don't have a lot of additional reporting here. I think we certainly could use some. They've had a long relationship, as we well know. Let me just set it up. I mean, we all know Google has paid Apple as much as, what, $20 billion a year to be the default search engine on the iPhone. And we've been waiting for what Apple is going to do when it comes to generative AI. We're still obviously waiting for that. What are your thoughts here on the story?
Well, this is huge because a lot of people thought that the next iteration of the phone may not have anything really big AI. Which therefore makes it so Samsung does have an advantage. Samsung's phones are selling very well at Best Buy right now versus Apple. This would change things. It would make it so that without spending a lot of money, because it costs a lot of money to get into AI, it would be seamless. And you suddenly would have a great AI engine within your phone, and you'd have a reason to upgrade. So if this is true, and they can get this into the next phone, holy cow, all the bears on Apple are going to have to eat crow. Bears don't. Do bears eat crow?
Yeah, I don't know. No.
They eat bad honey.
Yeah.
But I do think it's huge, and I think obviously Alphabet needed this. You correctly pointed out Alphabet has been, other than Tesla, one of the weak sisters during this period. So this is great for both of them. I think that the people who think that Apple has no AI, they got up this morning and they said, I hope Bloomberg has that story wrong. Please, Bloomberg, be wrong. And that's not a really good bet.
No. By the way, bears, I mean, they eat anything, bears, of course, as we
do
all
they?
Know. Yeah, I didn't mean to. I can see people.
Oh,
like,
that's
what
right.
Are you,
like you can't go camping. They're like not fun at all.
You know, the grizzlies love their salmon. All right. But what about Alphabet? We've talked a lot about the innovator's dilemma, about this fascinating story that's going to be unfolding for quite some time, which is, are they, you know, going to get disintermediated from their monopoly on search? And or is the response a proper one, given that perhaps they'll be able to use their engine here as search for Apple?
I think this was a game changer. I think that I was very worried about search being supplanted entirely by going to Copilot or to Claude. That's another one I use. Claude, how you doing? It's like Claude Rains. But yes, this is huge. And what it says is don't count Apple out anymore.
Yeah.
Because this combination makes both of them more relevant. I know we have to go, David.
I know.
But when's Oracle on?
I don't know. We're waiting. I'd love to have Software Cats on.
I tried to get Software on. That's the funny thing. I literally tried to get on for tonight. That was a promote for a show that I was trying to do for tonight. That's what happened.
Maybe that's where it got the confusion came in.
No
but
problem.
We do have Cisco coming up and Chuck Robbins. The company has completed its acquisition of Splunk. We'll have the CEOs of both companies. More Squawk on the Street is straight ahead.
Let's get straight to the point. You want to grow your portfolio to fight rising costs of inflation or pay off your debt or anything standing in the way of you and financial freedom, right? Yahoo Finance, our sponsor today, can help. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been helping great investors like you. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just looking for tips, Yahoo Finance makes it super easy by putting all the tools and data you need in one spot. Yahoo Finance takes a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and more. You can securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including 401k and other investments. That's how Yahoo Finance gives you insights and helps you take a look at your wealth in its entirety. That big picture perspective is what great investors need. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com.
Cisco announcing it has completed almost a $28 billion deal, all cash, to acquire the data services company Splunk. Joining us now first on CNBC is Chuck Robbins. He's the chairman and CEO of Cisco. And Gary Steele, CEO of Splunk, was here when you guys announced the deal. Now Gary is going to be a part of Cisco's executive leadership team. Gentlemen, nice to have you.
It's great to be here.
Thanks for having us.
You know, all right, it's part of the company now. So, you know, you have some other products out there in security offerings, for example, mm-hmm. I think AppDynamics, ThousandEyes. How do you sort of address potential overlaps, redundancies? How do you go to market now with your product portfolio, given the ones you previously had and what you now have?
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks for having us.
Sure.
We're in a situation where we have very little, we have zero overlap in security.
Right.
We have basically zero. We have slight overlap in what's called observability, which is basically monitoring the infrastructure for application performance and those kinds of things. And we've been working really hard over the last 6 months to actually address those and build an integration plan. Gary, you may want to talk a little bit about it. We're actually going to move the Cisco assets into Splunk on that in that particular part of the business. You want to talk
about that? I'm super excited about this. I think the combination of AppD plus Splunk's observability cloud gives us the best multi-cloud hybrid solution in the industry. So while there's some really good work that's going to happen, we think we can do a lot for our customers.
Super what does that mean, some really good work that's going to happen?
Simply bringing the AppD capabilities into Splunk, so driving that integration, and bringing the capabilities of AppD with the observability cloud. So customers can monitor their digital footprint and really understand their uptime and ensure that they don't have outages.
Chuck, I want to get Jim in, but just, you know, the bigger picture here in terms of what it means for the future of cybersecurity, observability, and how Splunk fits into the vision overall for Cisco.
Well, if you look at the combination of their data platform with our security portfolio, and particularly with our extended detection and response capabilities, you think about taking the data platform that they have for the customer, you apply high-end AI-based detection and response. What we believe we'll be able to do is give our customers the ability to identify threats and dynamically react to those threats in real time, because as the bad actors become better at utilizing AI to launch attacks, we think the real-time correlation of disparate events that together might indicate a security problem is a critical capability that our customers are going to need. And between our technologies, their data platform, we believe we can actually deliver that to our customers.
Right. Hour and there, you're the same now, you know.
That is true.
Yeah.
Hour and hour.
Yeah, hour and hour.
Jim, hey, it just happened in the last hour, you know.
It did. Yeah, the big wire transfer has been completed. Jim, I know you got a question.
Sure. First, congratulations, gentlemen. Successful at putting this together. I think it's really important. Gary, I'm going to go to you first. What is percentage of recurring revenue do you have? And now you're going to be part of the management team. What will your recurring revenue do for the whole mosaic that is Cisco? And what will it mean for the compound annual growth rate of the combined companies?
So Splunk brings basically $4.2 billion of annual recurring revenue to Cisco. We just wrapped up a very good year where ARR was growing 15%. And while we generated over $1 billion of cash flow on that ARR. And I'll let Chuck speak to how that comes together in terms of the overall ARR for the combined companies.
Hey, Jim, it's good to see you, and I hope you enjoyed being on the West Coast. I'm sure you're going to have fun this week.
Thank you.
When you look at the combined ARR, I think we're approaching $29 billion now. So it's a meaningful amount of our business. It's been a journey we've been on since I became CEO. We actually, as you know, achieved 50% of our revenue last quarter came from recurring revenue, which has been another thing that we've been trying to achieve. And if you just do the math on adding, I mean, obviously in the first four quarters, Splunk's going to be a significant growth driver from a financial perspective. And then even beyond that, growing the $4+ billion growing in the mid-teens on our business layers a point of growth on just by that alone, even in the outbound years. So, and that's without any of the revenue synergies, which were really the things that drove this deal in the first place.
Okay, so Chuck, in the last time I spoke with you on Mad Money, you did talk about activation issues. You talked about the idea that you could be limited this quarter just because there was kind of a backup in the system that from your customers. Can we make it so that that's not the focal point of the discussion now that this deal's closed?
Yeah, Jim, I think we talked a lot about the fact that on the tail end of this supply chain problem, the customers now are sitting on the inventory that we've delivered and they're trying to get all that installed. And so they've kind of slowed down their ordering patterns until they get that digested. And but I think the reality is that the transition that we've made to ARR and software and the recurring revenue is not fully appreciated because of that right now. And I think once we get through that, it will be fully appreciated. We're looking at a company now that has over $20 billion in software revenue, over 50% of our revenue now is coming from recurring offers and almost $29 billion of ARR. So we think over time it's going to be very positive and we're looking forward to the future.
Okay, you have the luxury now with Splunk of the generative AI that they have, which is immersive chat experience. That's now you. That's one part of the puzzle. I know that Jensen Huang, obviously GTC this week, has his own networking capacity, but somehow you're part of it too. And could you explain how you, which I regard as having a competitor product, are also NVIDIA's partner?
Well, Jensen approached us, as I've talked about, and he basically understands the relationships that we have with our enterprise customers and our understanding of how they deploy applications and how they build their infrastructure. And so he felt like we were the right partner for him to actually take his GPUs, create integrated stacks, to help facilitate the simple deployment of advanced AI workloads for our customers. And that's what you're going to see from us over the next 3 to 6 months. But if you look at the Splunk acquisition also, we think that same infrastructure now can power some of these data platforms that Splunk built over the years. And as you know, the more data you have, the more powerful your AI capabilities are going to be. And so we think between their data platform and our technologies, we can bring the ability for customers to let the enterprise customer to actually deploy and gain benefit from AI workloads in a very unique way.
Gary, Chuck referred to threats obviously as a result of AI in particular, great advancements. I mean, how quickly are things moving in the threat environment? I'm just curious to get your perspective.
Yeah, I think we're in a pretty difficult time right now. I think the threat actors continue to use advanced technology to design more sophisticated threats, whether they're phishing-related threats or other kinds of sophisticated attacks. The good thing is we're the defenders. All of us are leveraging AI in a very constructive way to better defend the enterprise today. And so while the stakes get higher, I think we're doing a great job of continuing to defend.
And finally, Chuck, let me just end sort of again back to sort of Cisco overall.
Yeah.
You know, I was only on Feb 14 when you were talking about coming out of the quarter of guidance.
Yeah.
You were cautious. Our customers this quarter, you know, you said saw more caution than the prior quarter, which led your teams to express more caution in the forecast. Is that still the case a month later?
Well, we're in the middle of the quarter, but I'd say that the dynamics haven't changed meaningfully. I think the good news is the economy, I talked about this a couple weeks ago, I think the economy is good. It's not great, it's not bad. I think it's good. And I think that's what's going to be reflected in our customers' ordering over the next several quarters as we look forward.
Right. So unchanged at
unchanged,
this point.
Unchanged, yes, I'd say.
Guys, thank you both. Chuck
thank
Robbins,
you.
Gary
thank
Steele.
You.
Both of Cisco.
We are both of Cisco.
Yes,
we
you are.
And very happy to be part of Cisco.
All right. There you go. Coming up, it's a West Coast edition of Jim's Mad Dash. We're counting down to an opening bell as well, which is about 6.5 minutes from now. Stay with us.
For more than a decade, Comcast has been committed to bridging the digital divide and connecting millions to affordable, high-speed internet. But the barriers to get connected go well beyond affordability. Through Project Up, Comcast is committing $1 billion to reach millions with digital skills training, resources, and opportunities needed to succeed in a digital world. Project Up, building a future of unlimited possibilities. Learn more at comcast.com/projectup.
Our first cross-country mad dash of the week. You want to talk a little Hertz, is what I've been told.
Yep. Steve Scherer, who was a very successful, obviously, CFO at Goldman Sachs for a long time, of course, we know him, it's 3 decades there, then went to Hertz a couple years ago, had a vision that maybe what he could be doing is trading cars, just like he traded stocks, trading like you trade bonds. It didn't work. The strategy to be able to make it so you take down, and by the way, he had been, the company had put in big orders for EV. The EVs, maybe he was the first casualty, if you tell me, the EVs depreciated rapidly, which therefore made it so that his fleet of Teslas was worth less than he thought. Maybe he thought that they would go up in value. Anyway, so he's leaving. Gil West is coming in, he's former COO of Delta, terrific guy. But it is, David, frankly, a defeat. It was initially very exciting, but the idea that you could somehow make it so you can trade cars like you can trade stocks and bonds did not work, and it was not fun for Steven. That did matter. He was hoping to have a great time. His skill set was not correct in the end. Saw slowing in EVs, moving on. David, it's a shame because I thought Steve was going to do unbelievably well with his strategy. I, too, did not see the decline in value of the Teslas that hurt his company so much.
Yeah, well, you've talked about it. We have as well, of course. That was a fateful decision to go big in that area. And as to your point, the when the values decline in the used car market, that had negative consequences. They've had so many different people run this company over the last 10 years, Jim.
Yeah, it's just not worked for anybody. Remember, it did go bankrupt, but it stayed.
Yes.
The stock continued to trade. David, I think it's just a very tough business. Because remember, travel has done well. We've seen cruise ships do very well. American Express, obviously, doing very well. Hotel chains doing very well. There's Expedia done okay. Bookings does really well. This did not take part in the great travel resurgence after COVID. And I think that maybe if you had just focused on that and not trading on cars, might have been fun. But that's not what he went there for. He didn't go there to run a travel company. He went there to do fleet management. That had been a great idea until the fleet depreciated, and then there was just not much of a strategy for him to, let's say, take advantage of.
Yeah, the fleet was not managed the way that he'd hoped.
No, it wasn't.
Didn't quite work out. All right, we got a minute until we get started with trading, and the sound picks up, and I can barely hear you, I'm sure, when that happens. So tell me what you think the key to this market is this morning before we get started with the week's trading.
I'm going to go with Alphabet because I think it was stunning. If it's true, the Bloomberg story true, it makes it so that Apple, which many people thought would fall behind in the race to the next $3 trillion, right, because it fell down from Microsoft to $3 trillion. A lot of people felt that maybe NVIDIA could pass it. I think that this says, wait a second, this could be the break that Apple needs, and suddenly Alphabet is far more relevant than we thought with Gemini, which a lot of people felt was a bust. Clearly not a bust. Maybe a resurgence for both. What a stock!
Listening Bell here at take a look at the real-time exchange back at our headquarters, of course, here at the big board, Elf Beauty, celebrating the 20th anniversary of its founding. We're going to be talking to the company's CEO. That'll be in the next hour at the NASDAQ.
Hey, David.
Yeah.
You got to ask Tarang. I mean, when some short seller went after him, he buried the guy alive. Man, the guy is just under, like, a lot of really bad cosmetics. I'm not
nice
kidding. He buried the guy alive.
All
and that's
right.
Because he's a great executive. The stock is up tenfold.
We'll make sure to talk about it. I'm sure Sarah's going to have a lot of questions. Over at the NASDAQ, that's Greek-based ship-owning company C3IS. That's what I'm going with. That's what it says. Who knows, you though? You know,
no,
who knows?
We have no idea.
Right. So where do you want to start now that we got things open, Jim?
Well, you know what, David? Can I just mention this Reddit deal that's coming?
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't know who it's going to be placed with. It should come tomorrow. It's very exciting because a whole new cohort of people might come into the stock market. But they are rebels. They're renegades. They don't like the a lot of them don't like the big monetization advertising push that Reddit has made. But you know what, David? I find that if you're going to be a public company, you have to try to make money. It's just something I've discovered in 40 years. It's important. You don't see a lot of charities coming public. I don't know if you know that. But Reddit is a company that it's in a crossroads where they got to make more money. At the same time, they got to keep the Redditors. And that means they have to keep the people who were, let's say, GameStoppers. Let's hope that that group turns out and owns the stock and doesn't trade it. And then you'll have a very successful deal.
But it's not an unimportant IPO, though.
I think it's very important because, frankly, we kept thinking that we were going to have a good IPO market when Birkenstock came, and we don't. I mean, Birkenstock just turned out to be like Mattel. You know, it's like Barbie. Jeez.
Well, remember we all got excited. Yeah, Birkenstock and Kava, which actually hung in there, did pretty fairly well.
David, may I comment that my wife, Lisa, whom we did have a Baconator by Wednesday, Wendy's. My wife has a pair of Birkenstocks. I think they're 30 times the price of my Crocs, but they look exactly the same.
Okay, so you're not a buyer of Birkenstocks, I guess, is what I'm
hearing. I'm not really a buyer of Crocs, but I think the fact is my Crocs hold up better than Birkenstock or cooler than Birkenstock. But you know what? There's no accounting for taste, David.
That is the case. That is often the case. But Reddit will be an important test. At least, I mean, again, to your point, we have not seen what we thought in terms of the IPOs, that especially given how many companies have been out there waiting for the window to open. How much more open could it be than
this period
of time?
I mean, people should be jumping out of the darn thing. David, just in AI alone, the companies that are going to be speaking at the conference, NVIDIA's conference, there's got to be 50 that want to come public. I mean, unless, did it change, David? Do people feel like if you're public, it's, I don't know, it's not fun? I mean, come on, don't people want to make money anymore? What happened to that?
I know, I don't know. Given the momentum in the market, given where we came from last year, where the window seemed to be slightly opening at least, and we did get a number of them, ARM obviously being the most important perhaps,
right.
And certainly
a
great performer. We've talked about the fact that there are not many shares out, but nonetheless, a great performer, one would have thought we would have seen more. And again, to your point, maybe it's a little early in the gestation for some of these companies that are specific to large language models, generative AI,
right,
and things of that nature, but there are plenty of other SaaS companies out there, Jim, that have been waiting.
Right, and that's why Birkenstock, ARM, we've got to get something going, and I'm hoping that Reddit gets people excited again. Right now, it's just, once again, people want that 5%. We didn't mention the Fed yet. Okay, the Fed. Now let's go back to NVIDIA for a second. NVIDIA's got a lot of partners. You heard Chuck Robbins. I mean, everyone wants the halo of Jensen Huang. Everyone wants to be associated with it, in part because it's been such a great performer. However, there are already naysayers, David. I am hearing people, including people on our network, are saying, this marks the peak. We've got the Fed talking tough. We're going to be finished with GTC. We're done with AI. I don't know. How can you say it marks the peak if you're talking about a multi-year transition from CPU to GPU? But I know short-termers are saying that this is the peak this week.
Yeah,
I'm hearing it. I'm hearing it from a lot of people.
There are, but there are also plenty who say that we are just at the very, very beginning. And the amount of compute power that we're going to need is staggering. And I've talked often, frankly, about one of the gating issues, not even being the chips themselves, but the power that is going to be needed to actually have these data centers operating at full capacity.
We have the grid have been moribund. There hadn't been more electricity used for many decades. Suddenly, we're having a 5% increase over last year because of data centers. Next year, forecast to be 5%. We're going to need solar. We're going to be needing wind. I think you and I both know, is terrific, but it's not going to happen. But we are going to need so much generation that the natural gas business, which right now natural gas is very cheap, is going to go into high gear, which is why I keep saying this Vernova is very interesting, this GE spinoff that we have in April. I think Vernova could be interesting, and I hate it. I thought it would be a loser. But the need for power, as you correctly point out, is just humongous. And I know that Jensen's going to be talking about how much heat these generate. They obviously generate less heat than you'd think. But wow, David, this data center move is making it so our electric grid is being taxed severely. And no one's talking about it except for you.
Yeah, you know, I had some interesting conversations, as I think I'd said, with those who are in the data center business. And that's what struck me was that's the key issue. And again, it doesn't mean we're going to be having blackouts or anything of that nature. It simply means that if you want to put shovels in the ground for the next data center, you've got to make sure you have a secure supply of power. And that may really begin to be an issue. We've discussed it.
Well, that's why I'm getting to Prologis tonight.
But
they have $500 million in data centers.
A lot of these utilities and whatnot went up. The stock prices went up a lot as though this is years to come in terms of being able to build the capacity that's needed. I mean, was that a justified move in many of those games?
No, not a justified move, because these companies have to find a lot of way. They got to finance, and obviously rates went up. The stocks are not great buys. I think Sempra is, because Sempra's got a lot of very good natural gas. But, David, the country isn't ready for it. Eaton had a meeting last week, is owned by my charitable trust. They're one of these companies that is done with trying to get the electrification grid going. The federal government obviously is spending a lot of money on this, too. But we're not ready. We're not ready for the demand. And it is going to be something to see where they put all the data centers, because they got to go where the power is cheapest. And right now, there is a hunt. One of the reasons why I want to talk to Prologis, they have 12,000 acres ready to put new data centers on. It may be the most important thing. Look at that. That stock's a horse.
Wow.
That's all data center. You're looking at a data center play. Vertiv, by the way, is the one that you and I know, Dave Cote, the chairman of. Vertiv is the pure play in terms of what's in the data center, and wow. And then don't forget Supermicro added to the S&P. I mean, there's a good chart.
No,
Supermicro's got a chart.
Right. It all comes back to, of course, NVIDIA in some ways. Dell is another name, right?
I mean, yes.
Hearing different things about just how profitable their servers that go into the data center that have the NVIDIA chips are. But it helps, boy. I mean, look at the move that stock had after earnings, because they have access to the key here, which, of course, is those H100s.
Well, David, do you hear bubble? Do you hear people talk bubble?
Well, yeah, you hear it. You hear it, Jim, but I don't know that the comparisons are appropriate to the bubble that you and I both lived through. I reported through it. You invested through it in the late 90s. So this is very different.
No, I mean, Michael Dell, as you know, an incredibly serious business person, is making a fortune doing a little bit attenuated part of AI. NVIDIA is able to charge what it can do because it's basically a monopoly. But it works. The total cost of ownership is not that bad. It's kind of like you got to think of it like a car. It performs very well after you buy it, but when you buy it initially, it's expensive. I just think, David, these companies are making fortunes, and that's why their stock. Well, AMD is making fortunes. That's why AMD's chart. If there was no NVIDIA, you'd say AMD's the greatest stock in history. But we have just many, many companies that are making fortunes in this business, and are. I'm going to use a word that I'm just going to use it. Indispensable. These companies are indispensable.
Yeah. Even though AMD is no match for NVIDIA when it comes to actually powering accelerated computing, essentially.
Right. Well, AMD doesn't have the data. It doesn't have the what you need to learn from. So therefore, it doesn't have the inference where you ask it something and it comes back with an answer. But it is a chip that's incredibly fast. And so I don't want to say that Lisa Su doesn't have something in the game. It's just that you need all the data already in before you can start asking it. And NVIDIA's got just tremendous data. They have the large learning models that are smart. And they know things. And they've combed the web. And you want to just plug in your questions. You don't want to wait around.
Jim, I want to come back to really what is the, we've mentioned a number of times, but it's the story powering two of the largest market cap companies, and that is this Bloomberg story again. Alphabet shares are up almost 7%. Now, remember, there's a decent amount of people who are short this stock, in part because of a story we've been discussing, which is, will they move quickly enough to defend search as it changes from the Google search to what will become the new search, which is you just go to a large language model and use that, whether it's ChatGPT, or Gemini, which of course is their entrant, or Copilot, or Perplexity, which actually allows you to use all of them. Perplexity is sort of almost like this Google for large language models. It is possible, isn't it, Jim? You know, again, it's early reporting here from, it would seem to a certain extent, from Bloomberg, and I'm just guessing, but it is possible that, isn't it, that Apple could be using all of them, right? I mean, do you have to sign up an exclusive deal
with just Gemini? That's a great question. I don't know. They do need to have something. Quickly, I think the Gemini is good. I mean, I guess you can make deals with everybody, but Gemini is good. I just think the problem with Gemini is exactly what you said, which is it going to take away from the ad revenue from search. When I think about Google these days, I was always just hoping that maybe YouTube would take up the vacuum and Google Cloud would take up the vacuum. I figured search has to go down because of all these new different systems, but this makes their search and their AI supreme again. David, this is huge. I mean, my Travel Trust owns it, and we have just been lamenting Alphabet for months. Well, no lamentation today.
Yeah, although, again, I would caution early. Nothing says this is going to happen. We've made the point many times when it comes to Apple, they don't have to be first. They got 1.2 billion right. people with in their system. You know, they oftentimes are not necessarily. It's just that
they, like
they have
first.
A better user experience than anybody else.
Right.
And that typically wins the day, at least certainly when you have 1.2 billion installed base, it can
right.
win
you
the
know,
day.
With touching 2 billion people, remember you got this great service revenue stream. Tim Cook has always said, look, we are a tech company first with a consumer that loves us and is very satisfied. You don't get that satisfaction, which is almost 100% satisfaction, by offering an inferior product. But, again, I keep going back to that Best Buy conference call where they just shocked me and said, look, the Samsung phone is the hottest phone. And the Samsung phone has a lot of AI.
Yeah, I know you've mentioned it any number of times.
Did I bore you with it? I mean, what the hell? I was the only person on the call.
No, I don't have one. I don't know. I haven't used it.
Were you on the Dix call? I was on the Dix call. That was a good call. You want to talk about that? And Powell, that great move of Under Armour, you know, to take the hotelier and can her and bring back a shoe guy. No, I mean, I could talk about a lot of companies. What would you like to talk about?
I don't know. You want to talk a little Disney so we can do a point counterpoint on that, too?
Sure. I mean, Jim Stewart with a very big piece in the New York Times that I think concludes, if you get to the end, that maybe Nelson would be valuable. David, kind of a not that positive article in the Wall Street Journal about Nelson.
No, competing articles over the weekend, very interesting in the timing. As you say, one quite positive, I would argue, overall in terms of Nelson Peltz. And then the Journal focusing more on the internal goings-on at Trian itself. I was surprised the Times did not have any mention of Ed Gardner, of course, who helped run that firm for many years. Certainly the author of, or at least behind many of the white papers. No mention at all in the New York Times story, but the Journal spent a good amount of time on it. The news this morning, Jim, is that these proxy advisory firms often do play an important role here. They advise many of the passive investors, namely the index funds, at least on how they should vote their shares. We do have one in so far that I'm aware of, which is Glass Lewis. That goes for Disney. I've got it here, I think, in terms of their recommendation. They will. ISS, I haven't seen yet. That's still to come. Both sides have been busy in meetings, as I pointed out last week. Of course, Bob Iger making the rounds in Boston and Baltimore and wherever the big institutions are making their case in terms of why Peltz and Rizzullo should not be on the board.
Well, look, I do think that on the one hand, you've got a stock that is going down substantially and just been miserable, of which some of that was Iger. On the other hand, you got a stock that's been red hot, and maybe that's Peltz, maybe that's this competition. But if Nelson's going to be defeated, he'll be defeated by the stock price being up so much because people just say, hey, listen, it's fine. Maybe they've gotten more focused. I come back, Dave, and do say that the white paper that Nelson Peltz put out is really about how the board is dysfunctional, not how the company's dysfunctional. And the board seems to has so many powerful, fantastic people. It is a little surprising that they were really bad at succession. It is surprising that they were bad at guidance of the CEO. And I think there's this misperception that if you're on the board, you're supposed to be running the company. Nelson doesn't run the company. He wants the board to be more focused on costs and on what they produce. But, you know, David, when you look at that board, it's like, how could they have so many great people and not be more thoughtful?
Well, there's arguments to be made. Obviously, they are in the midst of a seminal transition in the industry, of which they're a part. We've talked about it many times. You know, it's easy enough to say you could have done this or that, but
that's a good point.
You know, when you do compare them to some of their competitors who've been similarly involved in that transition, they look better by comparison. Obviously, have the parks to help fuel it, but not the easiest.
Right.
When it comes to succession, there's no argument to be made there. They screwed it up.
I know.
Period.
But you have Jimmy Pitaro, the guy who runs ESPN. He's a smarter guy, one of the smartest guys I've ever met. He's a terrific guy. David, ESPN, they lost so many subscribers. I mean, it's a little bit like the Dutch boy with the dike. And yet they're very thoughtful about what they do. Pitaro's a really good piece about it. I mean, really smart guy. But you know what? The industry is a tough industry right now. You're absolutely right. And thank heavens for theme parks.
Thank you. Yeah. Listen, ESPN still generates $2.8
billion
in operating profit. Not bad.
And they're very good company.
Obviously, it's a cable network, and there are far fewer people out there available to watch. Those that are, watch us, of course.
Of course.
But there's fewer.
They watch us on Reddit. Oh, no, Reddit. No, they don't.
They're not on Reddit. I don't know. All right, we'll figure out Reddit. While we do that, let's give you a quick look at the bond market this morning. We call it the bond report. It's when we check out how treasuries are faring and what the yields are. You can see right now we are up across the board with that 10-year at 4.316, the 2-year note yielding 4.73. We're right back. All right, let's get to it. Things have finally quieted a bit here, Jim. PepsiCo is the name you want to talk about?
Yeah, up almost 3% on an upgrade by a fellow. There's more than one Darrow on Wall Street, Darrow Mohsenian, who's really one of the best analysts who covers this consumer packaged goods group, Morgan Stanley. And it's a very cogent upgrade. This is a man who said, look, this company's slowing down. It's going to miss its targets. Gutsy thing, because Raymond LaGuardia doesn't miss targets. He's the CEO. Well, he did. And now Dara comes back and say, it's bottoming. It's about to inflect. I really like this call. The only reservation I have is that he really doesn't address the GLP-1. We haven't talked about Lilly at all today or Novo. He's saying, he's basically saying, look, this thing is so cheap and it's going to come back. I like the call, but I also want to keep one eye always on what people are doing with the Ozempics and the Mounjaros and the Zepbounds.
Yeah. All right. What does that tell you of late? Anything new on the old GLP-1 front? We actually didn't talk about Eli Lilly or Novo this morning.
No, I think there are people who are just saying, all right, let's see how big the numbers are. Now there's this, we're getting this backlash. Small companies that are picking away at some of what these companies might or may not be able to accomplish. I say use any week just to buy Eli Lilly. It's a core position for Travel Trust, and I think it goes much higher.
You do.
Yeah, because I think that hypertension and heart attacks, they're big preventable illnesses.
You didn't even mention Alzheimer's.
Well, I was disappointed that Lilly didn't get its Alzheimer's review and that it's going to be a full bore review, and I don't think they thought that would happen either. Let's see what's good. That's going to be a very big drug, but people are very concerned how much it's going to cost the system. But I thought that they are ready, and I was disappointed. There's no doubt about it. I'm not going to change my mind. That was just not great.
Yeah, but it's not as though it was cast aside. It's just going to take longer. They're giving it
Right. It's just that there was a lot of talk that it would be done by this quarter, and a lot of people, the work I do with American Brain Foundation, everybody I talked to thought that this was a gimme. And not Lilly's fault. Lilly was never promotional. But let's watch. You're absolutely right. It's not going to sidetrack it. It's going to happen.
All right, what do you got on the big show tonight from One Market, our headquarters out in San Fran?
Okay, first I've got Prologis. Again, they're just a gigantic warehouse company, but they have been focused very much on data center. Let's find out how much power they use. David, CrowdStrike is now the acknowledged king of cybersecurity. We heard what Chuck Robbins was talking about with Gary Steele. These are the guys that are doing the best. 30% revenue growth for as far as the eye can see. It's a big company now. Then onsemi, which is a company that stumbled. Why? Because it's really related to auto, but it's got a solar business that I'm interested in because it converts solar energy into regular energy for electricity. And again, David, you're I think your focus of what's going to happen to the grid and 5% increase in the amount of power we need year after year, we're just not ready for it as a country.
Yeah, well, a story we'll continue to discuss. Jim, have a great rest of the day.
Thank you.
I'll see you tomorrow morning, but of course you'll see everybody else on Mad Money tonight. Coming up right here.
Thank you.
In the next hour, ExxonMobil CEO Darren Woods. He's live from CERAWeek. More Squawk on the Street straight ahead.
You've been listening to the opening hour of CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
All opinions expressed by the Squawk on the Street participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, or their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information Squawk on the Street participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and/or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Squawk on the Street disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/Squawk on the Street disclaimer.
You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.